Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon. Don't know if it's good evening for anyone. This is the IRTPB call on the 26th of October. And on the call, we have Michele Nilon, James Bladel, Mikey O'Connor, Simonetta Battaglia, Barbara Steele, Paul Diaz, Barry Cobb, and Rob Mountain. And for staff, we have Marika Koenig and myself, Glenda Sanjuri. And Bodwan Shombi will probably be joining us when he comes off the call that he's on. And we have apologies from Matt Serlin, Anil George, and Kevin Erdmann. Has anybody registered any other apologies?
Michael Collins as well, Glenn.
Thank you very much, Marika. And may I remind you to say your name before speaking for transcription purposes, please? Thank you. Michele, over to you.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, good morning, good whatever other time zone you might be in. As per the wonderful GNSO rules and whatever, are there any updates to people's SOIs or DOIs? No takers, going once, going twice. Okay, fine, I'll take it that you're all still the capitalists you were the last time we spoke. Okay, the first item on our agenda today is the objectives and planning for the ICANN meeting in Cartagena, as most of you are going to be attending. So, thoughts? And thousands died in the rush. Okay, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note, and I think I already mentioned that to this group, that there is a publication deadline for documents that is the 15th of November. So if there's anything the group wants to discuss with the community or put out for discussion with the GNSO Council, it should happen by that date. In relation to the schedule, we already have a slot on hold, I think, for Saturday afternoon, during which the IRTP working group is expected to give an update to the GNSO Council. You know, there can be a presentation of the final report, should we meet the deadline, or there can just be an update on where the group is at this stage. In addition, I would like some indication from the group whether an additional meeting or workshop should be scheduled for during the week, as we've been requested to submit details of such meetings, I think by next week, Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, if the group thinks they might have a meeting, I would recommend that, you know, I put in a request, and we can always cancel that meeting if we don't need it or you know, it's not a convenient time. But at least if we have a slot, it means it's on the schedule. So that's it.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Boys and girls, does anybody have any thoughts? Okay, Paul Diaz.
Thanks, Michele. It's Paul. I just see Bob's note, recommend we book the slot. I'm not sure if he's talking about the weekend update, which is unavoidable, or something during the week. Actually, if it's the one during the week, I was going to say just the opposite. You know, unless we're much further along in whatever our new ETRP is going to look like, I think opening up and having a public session is just going to become, it presents just a huge headache, because you'll get all these folks who come in, they've got their own idea, they have no idea what the group's been discussing, etc. I'm very leery about having public sessions when a working group is well into its efforts. Much different when we're actively seeking public inputs. I mean, we always are, don't get me wrong, but I think if we are trying to, you know, move towards hopefully finishing this thing up in the next couple months, to have a public session at the ICANN meeting is just inviting a lot of potential mischief and or chasing down rabbit holes.
Okay, thank you,
Bob. So I would be against a slot doing it during the week.
Bob?
Yeah, this is Bob Mount speaking. I would agree with Paul. I didn't realize it would be public record of meeting. I was thinking more of just a working session amongst us as opposed to a public session. But I do agree with Paul as far as a public meeting.
Well, see, Bob, the private thing could just simply be you buying us all drinks.
We do that anyway, don't we?
Exactly, so that's fine. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. There are, of course, a number of options. You know, a working group can have a workshop where, you know, discuss results and get community input, but another option is to have a working session that is open to the public. But what some working groups have done, for example, is to reserve, you know, the first 45 minutes of such a session just for working group members to discuss, and open then the last 15 or 30 minutes for others to comment or ask questions or provide input on what has been discussed there. So there are different ways such a meeting can be structured. On the, you know, the actual documents and preparation for that, I have, you know, done some work already on the initial report and transforming that to a final report, and it currently sits with Michaela to have a look at that. Well, what I did attempt already to do there is to look at some of the draft recommendations and based on the discussions we've had following the public comments and further deliberations to try and write up some, you know, potential final recommendations or that the group can consider as a starting point to working towards a final report. Because, you know, I've raised this before, because I think on a number of items such as the ETRP, you know, this working group might spend, you know, many more months trying to work out a solution. But I think the group should ask themselves as well the question, you know, is this working group going to be the most effective means to come to, you know, complete package on, you know, all the language, everything that's required for such an ETRP, or is more effective to pass that on to either an implementation drafting team or staff to develop a proposal that then goes through the different rounds of discussion and testing and verifying that, you know, it works as intended. So that's the, you know, some of the questions that the group might want to ask themselves in you know, looking at Cartagena and beyond.
Okay. Thanks, Marika. I just see Paul Diaz putting on the chat there. An informal session could be constructive, but a formally scheduled session will get complicated, especially if we ask people to stay out of the room before or into the room after the WG participants have huddled in private. Does anybody else have any thoughts on this? Okay, let's just ask a very, very simple, practical question. If we were to hold a public meeting, what would we want input from the public on? Working on the basis that we're going to get it anyway. If we're going to have a public meeting, the public would want to get involved and would want to give us input. So on what topics, if any, would we want input if we were to have that kind of meeting? Any takers? Mikey, then Paul.
This is Mikey. I think that we're running the risk of going into an endless loop. We've spent basically the whole time since Brussels reviewing public comments. And if we got another round of public comments, I think we could probably spend the time between Cartagena and San Francisco reviewing public comments. Of course, then we could get public comments in San Francisco, and who knows where we would get to there. But on a slightly more serious note, I really don't think we've made enough progress to warrant anything except a status update for the council that says we've reviewed the public comments and now we're actually going to get to work. So my suggestion would be short update to the council, no meeting, no more public comment. We've had enough. I mean, we aren't even done yet, and we're 2 weeks away from the deadline.
Okay, thank you, Mikey. Mr. Diaz?
Thanks, Michaela. It's Paul. Totally agree with Mikey. I think the working group has an obligation to, figure out the... We've addressed most of the issues. We bounced around and avoided the ETRP. Most of these things I think we've been able to work through. Now we've got to get back and figure out what, if anything, we're going to do in terms of this ETRP And you know, my feeling is let's put something together within the group and then put that out to the public. If we invite the public now, I think we're just going to bog ourselves down. Exactly as Mikey's noted, becomes an endless loop.
Okay, thank you. Simonetta?
Hi, this is Simonetta. I just wanted to come back to something that Marika suggested last week that I thought about this a little bit and I thought it's actually a good idea. Marika was mentioning that we could look at this whole section of the ERTP comments and find out what the principles are that we can all agree on of what a policy should look like. So if we start with that, where we all agree, we can figure out where to move from there and either have someone else figure out the complete policy or at least have a starting point from where we can work off.
Okay, thank you. Just to close this one subject, okay, is there anybody who thinks we should have a meeting in Cartagena, a formal meeting? Is there anybody who feels... who feels strong
about
that? Yeah. Hello? I can hear chatter in the background, but I'm not too sure what that is. Okay, then. Bob?
Yeah, this is Bob. I just, you know, my sentiment would be it's incredibly rare that we all have the opportunity to be in the same place at the same time. I think it would be, it'd benefit the group if we could find some way at least to get together and work through some of these issues, you know, face-to-face, if that's possible, without adding too much overhead to the, you know, and as Paul had said, the public comments that would, you know, be a result of this. If there's some way to avoid that and just get together and have a working session, you know, I think we could maybe cover some ground that we otherwise would, you know, take longer over, you know, repeated conference calls. That's all.
Mikey? Yeah, Mikey, sorry.
This is Mikey. This is a question for Marika and Glenn, and that is there a way to schedule a meeting of the working group that's not public? Because I agree with Bob, I think it would be very useful to take advantage of the fact that we're all in the same place. It's just awfully hard to do it in a fishbowl.
This is Marika. It is possible to indicate if you don't want to have a meeting appear on the schedule and just ask for a room. I think it will be hard to, you know, put someone out of the door, outside of the door, and say you cannot enter. But I think if we don't publish it and just share the information, you know, with the working group, you know, it's definitely an option. Although, you know, the ICANN meetings normally are about openness and anyone can participate and access meetings. You know, I said what working groups have done in the past is just, you know, limit, you know, the first hour of a working group just to the working group members and working group discussions, and just, you know, allow some time at the end for questions or some discussion. You know, if the working group is just working through some of the items, you know, I would be surprised if there would be huge crowds coming if there's no specific topic identified as such. But yes, you know, as I said, I can indicate that the meeting doesn't appear on the schedule. But at the same time, if it doesn't appear, it might also be difficult to prevent opposite meetings being scheduled that, you know, might form a conflict because, you know, you might be interested in attending other meetings or other working group sessions.
This is Mikey again. Let me just follow up. One of the things that we see on ICANN schedules is private meetings. You know, GAC meetings are private. Some of them are, not all of them. Various constituencies schedule private meetings. Is there any reason why we couldn't simply put it on the schedule as a private meeting?
I don't think there is anything going against it. It's just going a bit against our practice of open meetings and anyone being able to attend and participate. I mean, you know, I know it has happened in the past with the private meetings in certain, you know, like the GAC, they close up the sessions. I mean, if the group, that's what the group wants to do, fine. I can request it like that. How long would the group like? An hour and a half?
Just before we go ahead with that, just one question, this is Michele. When, how many of you who are going to be attending physically in Cartagena are going to be around on the weekend before the meeting? James, Paul. I'm not sure if that's Bob's hand. If that's Bob's way of saying yes, or is he just going to ask a question? Simonetta, yes. Chris, when are you arriving?
Yeah, I think on the Thursday. I'm just fumbling to find the put my hand up.
Okay, so you'll be there basically. And I will. Barry, when are you arriving?
I don't think I'm going to be making it this time, so I'll just be attending remotely.
Okay, fine. So, I mean, okay, if you're remotely participating, then you're remotely participating. So I don't need to think about a room for you. I don't know, is Badouin going to be attending? Barbara said she wasn't attending, from what I recall. So, is it easier to get rooms at the weekend than it is during the week, Marika?
The problem is that the weekend schedule is already full back-to-back, basically, with GNSO-related meetings. So it would mean that, for example, I probably wouldn't be able to attend.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And I don't know if others are attending the GNSO session. So I think that would be more complicated. I mean, thing would be, for example, what we've done in the past. I know you don't really like it, but a breakfast meeting. There are not many breakfast meetings or an early meeting, and it might not conflict with other sessions that normally start at a later point in the day.
Okay. Ignoring my aversion for mornings, I have an aversion to the concept of morning, never mind anything else, how many of you would be willing... If you could clear your statuses, please, because otherwise it's going to confuse my poor little brain. How many of you would be available, do you think, in principle, for a breakfast meeting, if that was the only option open to us?
Depends on the day, doesn't it?
Thank you, Barbara.
This is Marika. It's likely that Wednesday morning and Thursday morning are the times in the meeting schedule where there is space for, you know, working group meetings or workshops. So likely Wednesday morning or Thursday morning.
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm starting to accumulate breakfast meetings now.
We could just start drinking and run on from the other end, say meet at 2:30 or 3 in the morning.
I mean, what I can do is request a meeting at one of the normal slots. So, you know, it would be 9 to 10 or I think 11 to 12. And then we can just see when the schedule takes more form, you know, whether that's suitable for all members or whether any meetings are scheduled opposite it that might form a conflict. I mean, the challenge for us is partly that, you know, we're having discussions within the GNSO team to see where people are planning meetings, but we don't have an insight yet where other teams are scheduling their events, so we'll get to see that at some point, and then it might be easier to say, okay, the only option is really a breakfast meeting if we don't want to conflict with meeting X, Y, and Z, or, you know, just a lunch break, for example, would be another time where people might be free to sit together. So my proposal would be that I put in a request, for either a Wednesday morning or Thursday morning, and then we just see... You know, what is most suitable, and Michaela, I can liaise with you
when
take more insight on what other meetings might be taking place at the same time.
Okay then. Excuse me. James has an idea for an after-hours meeting. I quite like that idea. Is this kind of the GoDaddy party in Cartagena, James?
This was me just trying to inject some humor into the discussion. But I think I would probably rather meet at midnight or 1 a.m. than 6 a.m. Just personal preference.
Yeah, I think actually we should formally adopt that as our target.
Mm.
1 a.m. seems like
you like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay. So do I. We
could solve the whole thing in probably about a half an hour if we did that.
I think that's actually a very, very good idea. Marika, would you be able to attend such a meeting if we were to organize one?
At 1 a.m.? Well, it depends what's on the schedule for the next morning, I guess.
That's the problem with morning meetings.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, moving on. In that case, Marika and I shall liaise. With respect to all the wonderful work that Marika did, has got something I'm meant to be reading, and of course I haven't, because I've been very, very bold and very, very lazy. But she has been reminding me every single day, diligently, around 10 a.m. Irish time, I get a message from her reminding me. So it's my fault, not hers. Marika is innocent.
And again, I'm also happy to share it with the working group. You know, already, as I said, what I've attempted to do is just incorporate the public comments and, you know, some of the additional discussions we've had, and I've made an attempt of you know, adapting some of the recommendations.
Okay, well, in that case, share it with the rest of the group, because I'm obviously being useless. So just send it out to the entire group mailing list, and then let's see if anybody else is a little less useless than I am, and then we can move forward from that. Paul Diaz also notes this in relation to this with regards to the conference place. He thinks that might actually close around 6 p.m., which is possible. And he talks about hotels having nice sitting room sitting areas. I'm personally staying in a dive, which I chose intentionally because it was cheap. So I don't even know if it has a nice sitting area. But I'm sure we can all work that out. Is that your hand from earlier, Marika, or is that a new hand?
No, this is Marika. This is a new hand. Actually, on the last point on the schedule, on the draft schedule we have, they're actually meeting scheduled until 7. So I guess there is some flexibility there to the notion of whether when the conference room closes. And on the notion, I'll send out the report, the updated version, and I think it would be helpful to get an indication from working group members if they have a chance to review it, to see whether they like the approach being taken, because if there would be support, we might still meet the 15th of November deadline, and then it would be important indeed that we make an effort and review and refine the report, or an indication saying, look, this is the deadline is coming too fast, and we just take more time and maybe use this document as a basis for further work beyond towards Cartagena and beyond.
Okay, anybody else? Any other takers? No? Okay, then. Bob and Simonetta, you're up.
Okay, great. Thanks, Michele. This is Bob speaking. So Simonetta and I had gone through and managed to get through a number of our members of the cohorts, and this was regarding the aftermarket survey where we went to people who weren't part of the working group, identified a number of cohorts, and surveyed them about ETRP, asking them if they were familiar with ETRP, what feedback they might have about it, also asking questions like how many hijackings they had experienced over the past 12 months, how many they've ever experienced. So we successfully reached out and spoke with 10 individuals representing companies that were across three of the five cohorts we had identified. So we were able to speak with marketplaces, aftermarket domain marketplaces, aftermarket domain registrars who are active in the aftermarket, as well as domainers who are obviously active in the aftermarket. We did not get through to brokers or clients of brokers, so we'll continue to work to get through to those, and we'll add that to the summary. In terms of, I'm sorry, did someone have a question? Okay. In terms of the marketplaces, so there were two marketplaces we spoke with. One of the marketplaces had never experienced a hijacking. The other marketplace had experienced one hijacking, which was successfully resolved through the efforts of the through the efforts of the operator of the marketplace. There was certainly familiarity with ETRP, and I will send all the notes out. But just to sort of, just to summarize, I believe the you know, the consensus on ETRP was with the marketplaces was probably overkill, I guess would be the, with the phrase. It's not a big problem, and the efforts that have been used by the market, or that have been implemented by both marketplaces, have been sufficient you know, to overcome any sort of hijacking instances. At least I spoke with one of the marketplaces. Simonetta, do you want to comment on the on your interview?
I mean, you captured it, so there's not much to add.
Okay. All right, great. Then on domainers, I think this is where we tended to get more traction in terms of getting through to people. We actually spoke with five different domainers. None of them had experienced any hijacking, although they were very concerned about it because they all knew people who had experienced hijacking. There was a strong belief that the tools to prevent this exist, but that you have to be on top of your portfolio. All of the people we spoke with, or some of the ones I spoke with, were, you know, I would say were on top of their portfolio. They had written routines themselves to monitor their portfolio, for example. But they did say not everyone is, and they did have colleagues who had experienced hijackings, and one in particular had been a real nightmare. And had the domainer not been a lawyer, they felt it would have been, he probably would have lost it. He was successful in getting it back in the end, but only because it went to the litigation. So, again, that was, you know, one of the domainers I spoke with believed that ETRP had some definite potential. Just wanted to see it fleshed out, the details brought forth a little bit, and perhaps the onus of responsibility placed a little bit more on the registrant, the losing registrant, as opposed to the losing registrar. I think the other two I would have to say were not in favor, as they felt there was probably a bit of overkill. Simonetta, anything to add?
One of the individuals I spoke to mentioned a few things that I found very interesting, because he, and I didn't mention that to him, he also came up with a comparison to the credit card industry and also to the telecom industry when he was speaking about phone cards, where I guess he has some experience. And he was mentioning how in both areas, the companies that are working on the prevention of these things before they're actually happening is where they put most of their focus. And I'm sure everyone knows these somewhat annoying calls you get from your credit card company when something happens with your card that they find is an unusual activity and they want to verify that this is actually you charging something to the card. So basically setting up some kind of a risk profile system at the registrar level is something that he felt should be done both on the gaining as well as the losing side of any incoming transfers. And he mentioned a ton of little things that could be done, like, for example, checking if someone who has just created an account with an email address that contains a lot of numbers and weird characters for the very first time enters a completely new credit card number and immediately starts asking for an incoming transfer, that could raise a red flag that you would start looking at this transfer before you even execute it. And things like that, which I thought was some interesting thoughts that we could maybe take more of a look at to come up with some kind of a recommendation of what can be done at a registrar level to prevent the fraudulent transfer to happen in the first place. So I thought that really had potential. And the second comment he had, and that's in line with anyone I spoke to, was that everyone I was speaking to was mentioning that there needs to be some way for the other side to make their case. And obviously the first thing that domainers think of and marketplaces think of in this context is what if a seller is just after the sale going back and saying, well, I sold my $300,000 domain and now I'm just getting it back. So they didn't really think that this was a working solution for the buyers in a marketplace scenario. and that there needs to be some kind of a dialogue going on between the gaining and the losing side before you decide if this should be reversed yet or no.
We also spoke with three registrars, again, registrars that are not part of the working group. In the past 12 months, none of them had experienced any hijackings, although if you, over the past, when I took the time constraints off, we had some results. One of them had had no hijackings ever. One of them had had two hijackings, in the past few years since they had been affiliated. And one of them had had 100 hijacking attempts over the past 10 years. So there was a big variance there. I wasn't quite able to figure out why one of them was at 100, but I was going to circle back with them and try and get a little bit more detail now that we have contact. Again, they were all able to successfully resolve these. The way they did that was to they were able to do that at either the gaining or the losing registrar to resolve the situation. The comments that Simonetta made, I also heard, was the suggestion of some kind of early warning system so that when someone does attempt fraud, that the identity of that person would then be shared with other registrars. That would be perhaps part of this early warning system. So that was a suggestion that I thought we might want to take a look at, as it might help other registrars to avoid some fraud that was attempted first at one registrar and consider others. So that would be sort of preliminary findings based on our first 10 interviews. We'll write these up and distribute them to the group so that everyone will have a chance to look at it, and as well we'll try and get to the other two cohorts that we won't be able to get to hopefully before the next call.
Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Michele. It's Paul. And Bob, you just said it. This is all great information. If you and Simonetta would please put your notes together and post it to the list so we can see it in writing. I don't know if you've spoken to any of my colleagues, but for sure Network Solutions has dealt with hijacking cases in the very immediate term and quite a few over the past year if you're going that far out. Also would note that some of the ideas that have been expressed in terms of potential best practice recommendations and whatnot are things that I'm sure some registrars are already doing. I know we do. And I think that's a good idea for the working group to highlight things that we think may be helpful. We may want to consider working if we can draft these up, sharing them with ESSAC. I know that they are finally in the final stages of publishing their follow-on to ESSAC 040. This new report, and Ram Mohan had basically scooped a lot of the ideas in Circle ID a couple months ago, but it's going to have a laundry list of things registrars should do, registrants should look for in the registrars in terms of protecting their domain names. A lot of this stuff is kind of commonsensical. Other things are more sophisticated, really will get folks thinking. The important thing ultimately is that, again, some registrars are doing it. That's the nature of the competitive market. It's good to highlight, but, we probably don't want to get overly prescriptive and certainly not overly detailed in some of these because the bad guys will be watching and reading as well, and we don't want to give them blueprints to further game the system.
Paul, this is Bob. Yeah, we'll absolutely circulate the notes, following this meeting. The other thing I talked about was, and Paul, none of the registrars that are part of this working group were actually on the part of our survey. We just wanted to try and get, other perspectives other than the people on the call. So one of the things that did come up was the organization, the Registrar Alliance, which was sounded like they're sharing information today about ways to avoid. And I believe you're part of that, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm the one who vouched for you to get you in.
Okay, I thought so. I thought that, very interesting group. Sounds like they're doing a lot of the things that might be helpful, based on the responses we're getting for this. So. But anyways, we will circulate the notes, and thanks.
Um, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Paul's comments reminded me of a follow-up item that I had on checking when that ASAC report is coming out, and the last thing I've heard that it's supposed to come out, I think, sometime next week. And as soon as that happens, I'll forward a copy to the working group.
Okay. Just one question there to Bob and Simonetta before we move on. This information sharing, what information were you talking about sharing? Sorry, was that just... if I'd actually seen your notes, I'd probably have understood this, but just because the two of you talking about it, I'm a bit confused.
Yep. This is Bob. You know, it was one of the suggestions was if someone experiences a fraud attempt, that they circulate that to this list so that, you know, with as much information they have about the attempted, the person who is attempting the fraud to hijack the domain. You know, just as a way so that if this person is trying that other places, that, you know, they'll know about it and they'll be on the lookout for that particular person.
Okay, so it's not something kind of specific. It's not like it's kind of a general sharing of information.
No, hang on, Michele, it's Paul. Look, and just for the non-registrar members of the group, don't anybody feel that you're being left out. This group is a private list. Okay, so it's for registrars only. It's really for people in the customer service departments, sort of the pointy end of the spears here, who see the fraudulent attempts as they're occurring, and the list is actually quite detailed, quite actionable. They will share IP addresses, email addresses, names that are being used by well-known and New guys who pop up, attempting hijackings, attempting God knows all sorts of things, and it was created by senior customer service reps at a handful of companies and extended to their points of contacts across the registrar community because we realized that there were no other good fora to share this information and to make sure that, you know, in some cases in the past people have taken the attitude that, hey, let the problem go away and it's somebody else's problem. With things like hijacking and some of the other fraud attempts that we see nowadays, you can't get away from it. And that sort of very short-term mentality we collectively found was very, very detrimental. So now it's a, you know, data sharing forum, but again, it's a private list. It has nothing to do with ICANN other than the fact that we're registrars, and it's only available to registrar reps. And basically, you got to get vetted by somebody who's already in to join up.
This is Simonetta. This is exactly what the feedback was from one of the domainers, saying that something like that should be done, and I'm glad to hear that it is already done. And he mentioned that, again, I guess he has a background in the credit card processing field, and he said this is exactly what they've been doing when they started to share problematic credit card numbers, problematic IP addresses, and just patterns of what people are doing in terms of email addresses formatted this way in combination with country login from XYZ or geolocation of the card used is Port Authority Terminal in New York City in combination with this, and that. And just these patterns should be shared. And if that's already done, that's great. And I just wanted to mention, I know this is registrars only right now, but we have a lot of data like this as well that CEDAW would be happy to share with that list. I mean, we have a registrar accreditation as well, so I'd be interested to get someone in our security and compliance team linked up with that group.
Simonetta, Paul, because you are accredited, you'd be absolutely welcome. And please ping me off list. We'll put you in touch with the folks and get whether it's you or your colleague, whomever, in the loop.
Okay.
But when I say registrars only, I just mean, look, we're not extending out to the intellectual property and the business constituency and the others. It's meant to help the folks that are really at the point of interaction with customers and dealing with the fraud, share information and get things done.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. Thank you, Bob and Simonetta. If you could try to put some kind of notes together and just email them to the list, that would be helpful. So I think I suspect that several people would have possibly have questions or queries on what you've got so far, but at least having it in writing would help us to see exactly what it is that you have. Does anybody have any other questions or queries for Bob or Simonetta at the moment? I'll take that resounding silence to mean no. Now, there's another matter which isn't on the agenda, though it should be, but my brain wasn't working fully yesterday when we were doing up the agenda. Next week, there is a change in the time of this call for European participants. Marika, could you explain this? Because you explained it to me yesterday, and it made sense to me at the time, but I'm at a loss to explain it now.
Yes, this is Marika. So in Europe, we're ending daylight saving coming weekend, which means if we keep the call next week on the same UTC time, it is an hour earlier for European participants. For the weekend after that, the U.S. is changing also their time. So then the proposal will be for the week, I think that's the week then of 7th of November. From there onwards, we just stick to the same local time, which means that we move the UTC time, so nothing changes for anyone. It just means for next week calls, for those in Europe, the call will be 1 hour earlier.
Just related to that, and I should have actually asked you that yesterday, I forgot. Will any of the other calls be rescheduled as well, or is it just this one? As in, is this being done with all the GNSO calls?
Yes. The proposal is for once U.S. and Europe have switched time to just change the UTC time, which means that the call stays at the same local time. And for next week, we're just checking group by group whether it is an issue for some members or not, and then it will just continue. I mean, the working group could decide as well to change the hour if that's more convenient, or pick another time for next week if because of the change in time it's not workable for some.
Okay. Who's dialing in from Europe apart from me? I think Chris is.
It's not a problem.
What's his name? There's a couple of others from the UK as well, as far as I know. But of course, they're not on the call today. Samantha, are you calling in from the States or Germany?
From the States.
Okay.
And Michaela, what we can do, I can ask Gita to just send out a notice and ask people to indicate whether it is a problem for them if the call is an hour earlier for those in Europe.
Yeah, cool. Perfect. I have just realized as well that next week at this time I won't be able to make the call because I think I'm on a plane somewhere. So normally I ask if James can chair the meeting when I'm not around. James, are you available next week? Or are you away?
Good question. I'll have to check, but probably make that a more democratic process anyway than anyone else would like to.
So is anybody who would like to throw themselves on a sword and like to chair the meeting next week, as I won't be able to attend it? I'm traveling, and so is Marika.
Yes, this is Marika. That's right. I'll ask one of my colleagues to step in.
And Barbara's not able to attend next week. Barry's suggesting that we postpone. I don't mind, personally. Paul not away, isn't available next week either. Kids are all dropping off like flies. A couple of people expressing a preference to postpone the meeting. Is there anybody who has... Okay, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. You know, if we're postponing and if several members are not available, maybe it's a good moment to then encourage people to actually review the documents and share comments on the mailing list, so maybe we can have a dialogue on the mailing list to see, you know, what might be achievable for Cartagena, if there's anything you want to put out or share already with the council or the community at that stage. I hope to get those documents out later today.
Okay. All right, then. So we will postpone the meeting next week, and we will focus on the reviewing the documents in the meantime. Yes? Agreed? Disagreed? Agreed. Okay, one person agrees with me. Okay, you all suddenly agree with me. Thank you. All right. Also, as we are pretty much nearly at the end of the hour, I don't want to go diving into comments now because we won't actually get anywhere. So I would, therefore, humbly suggest that we wrap up the meeting today and look forward to discussing things with everybody via email over the next few days. Are there any other matters that would anybody wants to raise at this juncture? No? Okay, then. I'll speak to you all in 2 weeks' time, then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michaela.